Welcome to the Cyber Rants Podcast, where we're all about sharing the forbidden secrets and slightly embellished truths about corporate cybersecurity programs. We're ranting, we're raving, and we're telling you the stuff that nobody talks about on their fancy website and trade show giveaways, all to protect you from cyber criminals. And now, here's your hosts, Mike Rotondo, Zach Fuller, and Lauro Chavez.
Hello, and welcome to the Cyber Rants Podcast. This is your co-host, Zach Fuller, joined by Mike Rotondo and Lauro Chavez. And today we have a fascinating topic, compliance. It is something that's just critical, not always the most fun thing to talk about or dive into, but I think we're going to share some insight that will help you along the way, because reality is this is a problem for everybody. But before we do, Mike, why don't you kick us off with the news?
Actually, Zach, we're not doing news this week, remember? I just came back from vacation, and frankly, people, I apologize, but I did not have time to look up some news stories for you. But there's a ton out there, and guarantee that. I'm drinking out of a fire hose after vacation.
Shattering the mold here. I don't even know what to do. Can we?
Yeah, we're freelancing
quick,
today.
Quick, switch to Lauro with exploits.
Lauro, take over, please. Save us.
Abort.
Eject the button. Pardon that. Anyways. We've always got exploits to talk about. So this week, I think it's kind of an interesting week because there were 9 WordPress plugin exploits dropped, all by the same researcher, all for PHP, all for subsistic apps and plugins. Okay, so if you got WordPress out there and you're using any of the subsistic plugins, there's just some righteous. Just some righteous exploits for Metasploit framework available out there right now for almost every version of subsistic that's out there. Yeah, it's kind of he took version 1.1 and wrote a SQL injection for it, and then he took 1.4, wrote a SQL injection for it, and then he took 2.3 and wrote a local file inclusion for that. So it's just like he's like, oh, these guys are just, you know, completely beside themselves. So I'll take an opportunity to do a bunch of bug bounties here. Make sure you're checking your WordPress if you're using any of that subsistic plugin stuff. Get on version, 4 or 5 or something.
That's it. Don't use WordPress at all.
Yeah, or that. Yeah, there's always that. That'd be too easy. It's no fun if you don't have anything risque on the public internet of things, you know.
True.
We wouldn't have much to talk about.
I guess that's true, wouldn't it be?
So here's a quiz. Can anybody can you name all the compliance frameworks in alphabetical order? That's right, nobody can. Never been done. Because there are a lot of them. And regardless of it's almost like the flavor of the week, right? Popping up different state level frameworks, national level frameworks, and then all for all different industries. You have this constant kind of web of things to navigate through. And so we always advise, of course, which we've talked about in earlier episodes, focus on a primary industry recognized cybersecurity framework, not a compliance requirement, but a cybersecurity framework that's holistic for the industry. Work on aligning to that. And then all these different compliance requirements will start to fall into place much easier over time. But it's just amazing how many requirements some companies are faced with these days, and the list seems to be growing. My question is, and maybe you guys have an answer, but why can't we all just get along here? Why can't we come up with some more standardized, you know, multi-industry type requirements that everybody just abides by, at least in the US, rather than all these little nuanced things and then people popping up with new frameworks and then charging you to be certified in them and on and on and on when they're really saying the same thing as the others. Anyway, I'm ranting. I guess that's the point of the podcast, but why do they do that?
This is the way.
Yeah. Gotta make money somehow, man.
You know,
like an industry in itself, isn't it?
It is. it's the same reason that payment terminals aren't the same across the board. It's like, why do I have to go to three different retailers and deal with three different payment terminals? So I, you know, look ridiculous standing there trying to figure out what green button I hit and when, and do I swipe or do I put the chip in, or, you know, so it's frustrating, but it does seem to be a constant theme across the board with other things besides compliance. I'm not surprised. You know, Texas will be the next one, right? You got California, you got New York. There'll be something from Texas, probably something from Florida, something from Georgia coming out with certain, like CCPA for California, something stipulating certain requirements for their data, right? Or their citizens' data.
Yeah, oh, yeah, things like the New York Shield Law too, which is, you know, around, basically it's a enhancement to HIPAA or replacement to HIPAA if you're not HIPAA compliant. And, you know, every state has their own. I know Minnesota has one too. And, I think they were, last time I checked, because I was working for another client that has HIPAA compliance issues or is required to be HIPAA compliant. I think there was 32 different states that had their own reporting requirements.
Yeah, the way around it is you've got to be a data scientist. You've got to look at the frameworks, because, you know, here's the thing is that, you know, all of it's derivative of, well, I mean, the Rainbow series, right? But a derivative of NIST.
Right.
And it's spun off. It's articulated in a different manner. It's presented in a different manner. However, there are a lot of commonalities. And so picking something, I always say, if you secure your infrastructure and your enterprise, you know, above and beyond, then most of the, you'll be able to meet most compliant, right? We always talk about that, Mike, right? Security isn't compliance. Yeah. Sort of thing. Compliance isn't security. Security is typically will help you be compliant.
Right.
But they treat the compliance pieces as a security framework and then negate to realize they're scoping things so narrowly that they're really only securing a less than 10% of their infrastructure.
Well, yeah. And when you've got someone that's gotten multiple compliance, so then you've got the people focusing on PCI, then you got the people focusing on HIPAA, and you got people focusing on, you know, HITRUST or whatever else is out there. When in reality, if you had a unified security framework and you based everything off NIST or CIS or whatever, you would nail most of those things just hitting CIS. And then there's the additional little tweaks. And like the Shield Law, you know, the difference between, you know, it states towards the bottom that if you're HIPAA compliant, you're pretty much covered. I mean, forgive me, no letters. I'm just speaking in generalities here. But one of the big things that they have is that the notification process of a breach is not 30 days, it's 10 days. And so you have to say that in your documentation. And that's the big, you know, the big glaring difference between those kind of things. I mean, so it's the little pieces. But yeah, I mean, you focus on the framework and then you can go from there.
So somebody got paid to change that number from 30 to 10?
Yeah.
Wow, I want that job. go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, no, go ahead, Zach. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's pretty amazing. You know, I think that you're absolutely right. You know, I think a good framework, well, NIST, of course, the, you know, whether you're looking at NIST, CSF, or 800-171 or 853, there's so many commonalities across the board. I don't know that I've ever looked at a compliance framework that I was just, you know, that was new to me or something that I was looking into and had like a wow or an aha moment saying that's something new for cybersecurity.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe you guys have seen something out of the ordinary or that you hadn't seen elsewhere, but I just haven't seen that yet in the world of compliance.
No, PCI tries to be that, I think. You know, with 4 coming out, we'll see what. I haven't been really paying a lot of attention to some of the changes that they've, you know, gone through as, you know, not part of that process anymore. But it'll be curious to see how they've evolved the framework to meet, you know, the modern threats that are out now. And that's the other problem, right? Is that some of these frameworks are trying to get you to protect things that are no longer really a threat. You know, logging is one of those weird things, right? Where, you know, that centralized logging is this big requirement. You got to centralize all your logs. Well, yeah, sure. Your logs are going to tell you that you had a breach, but you're not going to go find the criminal. You know, this isn't 1997 where, you know, the hackers have to learn that when they break into a system, they have to go and delete the log files. Now they're just coming through 43 VPNs and through Tor. So it doesn't matter what IP you see, it's not the right one, right. Thus negating the need for the log file delete, right? So There's a lot of old controls that are like not applicable to kind of modern threat modeling exercises, I guess, that could be done. And so it'll be interesting to see what PCI kicks out, and if they've, you know, assisted in the structuring of things around like network segmentation and how to define scope and those sorts of things.
And we've both worked for a company that decided the entire company was in scope, but couldn't.
That's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, but they couldn't put their hands around basic compliance structures, let alone,
sure,
you know, everything was a business exception and everything was, we can't, sure, do that because. And it's like, well, okay. Yeah.
Scope creep, right? And it's funny because, you know, and as much as I, you know, I mean, I've been, you know, we've been with PCI since it was Visa CISP, right? So we've kind of seen the whole evolution of this framework come about through the payment card industry and the brands. And so I love it, right? I like teaching it. I like talking about it, I like helping companies go through assessments with it. But you certainly see how companies react when they ask, like, oh, how do I limit scope to just the systems that matter? And I ask, like, why would you only want to secure these systems and be the organization that says, oh, hey, look at us, we've got 4,000 systems, but only 200 of them are secured.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, why would you buy an enterprise cybersecurity tool for endpoint security and only deploy it to the people that work in the call center? It just doesn't make sense, right? Why you wouldn't do something from a holistic perspective. And so when people ask about that scope, it, you know, I always say that, you know, you don't want everything to be in scope because you don't know what's going on. And thus everything has to be. You should certainly know where your CDE is and you know, your data flows in and out of what systems would, you know, be involved in that storage, processing, and transmitting function. But you need to look at it from a reasonable defensive perspective and say, okay, well, if we're going to defend this, I don't want somebody to break into a call center computer or, you know, a non-call center computer and then use that as a pivot point. Let's make a holistic decision to deploy the tool holistically and secure the whole organization under the guise of doing the right thing for PCI, right?
Yeah, plausible deniability is no longer an option.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, totally. And it's like, I want to limit scope. So on the rock, I don't have to fill in, you know, the 8,500 machines that I have that are in scope.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a beta exercise.
I remember a company that I worked with, you know, we were going through the audit and I was new there, and they're like, well, we're going to take these machines out of scope because they're A, deprecated, and B, you know, it has older data on it and it's all PCI data. And it's like, no, you can't take that out of scope. It's a fail. It's an automatic fail. How about we fix it instead? How about we not have deprecated machines?
There's a lot of what I'd say auditor lore.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of assessors that come in that have no technical experience, no real previous experience under PCI and how to implement it in a technical manner, right? And I think that's a big part of being good at this, is being able to understand what the requirement says and then how to actually go and configure it in a technology or deploy it to meet the control. Otherwise, you're just reading it off. You know what I mean? And so there's sometimes a huge knowledge gap from the assessor coming in, you know, seeing certain things and claiming things aren't in place when they really don't understand, you know, what the framework is asking for, and then how to demonstrate that, how to better demonstrate that in the technology itself.
I got one worse for you. I remember I was doing with a SOC 2 audit and they wanted to explain how software was installed. And I asked the auditor, have you ever installed a piece of software? And he said, no.
Wow.
So it's like, at that point,
okay,
turn off your computer, okay, send it back to the manufacturer, and go live in a cave somewhere.
No, I wouldn't do that. I would say just page me. We'll page you if we need you.
That's right. Pager's a turnkey system.
Well, another great example is that. So, you know, again, I had a PCI assessor come in and start, again, the organization, you know, applied a limited scope to try to, you know, get their arms around the brunt of the problem, right? Where they needed security most. So I certainly agree in a phased approach, right? You should start with your in scope systems and then kind of, you know, broaden that out to the rest of the universe, right? But they were in for an assessment and started complaining about the network segmentation and how we hadn't implemented it properly. And then they couldn't really articulate what network segmentation was. But what they did, well, here's the thing, and this is something that is, so if you're in PCI, listen to this. So the assessor basically told me that because PCI DSS doesn't define network segmentation, that I didn't have a place to go back to prove him wrong in the instance of him questioning the scope. Now, he's right. PCI DSS says that you can use segmentation, like in the very front of the document. It's like on page 11. All right. Like right when you get into the, because that's the beauty thing about PCI, right? It tells you how to do everything. It's like a IKEA instruction box, right? So in network segmentation, it tells you that you can use it to limit the scope. It doesn't tell you how to implement it. Okay. And so he's partially right there. So this is what we did. Absolutely. You're right. So now, while other networking professionals out there, right, and are going to, you know, kind of laugh at this sort of scenario, what we did is we built an information technology standard that defined what network segmentation was and how it was deployed in this particular organization. And so once we defined what network segmentation was using basic, you know, internet public accessible knowledge on how fundamental networking works when you segment compartments and VLANs and ACLs and stuff like that. We articulated this in the document. And then when we were then asked again about why we chose the scope and how we limited the scope, we could stand on the segmentation methodology in that network segmentation standard to say, this is what we've determined as an organization, what network segmentation means to us and how we apply it with our technologies. And this is how we used it to limit the scope that you see here. And problem was over. But I mean, you know, it didn't need to come to that, but it's interesting that PCI, in the instance of, you know, kind of, you know, wanting to, you know, they can't build this, they can't write every organization into a corner. So they structure the language specifically for a reason so that they can apply to any organization at any time.
Right.
But they lack some of the, I guess, strategy language. And in this case, it not only doesn't allow an organization to kind of fully understand what they can do with network segmentation to, like, you know, build a phased approach for PCI, it also gives an assessor a place to come in and blow scope out of the water and say, you didn't put network segmentation in place properly. Everything's in scope. Because what does that do to their service fee now that instead of looking at 50 systems for PCI, they're having to look at 50,000?
No.
So yeah, they probably want it, right? They want that convolution on their benefit.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, kind of like a lot of the legal system, right? There's certain people that always win. I won't name who that is, but right, there's certain parties that always come out ahead. And so usually it's not the people caught up in these things, but as far as speaking to those people that are, let's say they've listen to the message, they understand aligning to an industry standard framework, and now they're tackling compliance requirements. What would be your guidance for them as far as systemizing it so that it works year in and year out like clockwork within their organization? So it's not just a big, heavy lift for 30, 60, 90 days every time the auditor is about to come through. How should they go about thinking about that and executing that so it's more streamlined?
When we say it together, Mike, operationalization.
Oh, yeah. Operationalization.
Say it again, operationalization. It's really the only smart way to go forward with any of this stuff because it's cyclical, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise it's a fire drill every year, right? I mean, if you don't operationalize it, then, you know, you're just killing yourself. And we work for companies that refuse to do that, right? And how many conversations and meetings are we in that where someone's asking a question, well, what exactly evidence do you need, or how exactly do I do that? And, you know, it gets to the point where you're just spinning wheels and wasting time.
Sure. And you know, I think, well, some organizations don't want to do the work, right? They have other things going on, and they're happy to pay a third party to come in and deliver evidence and refresh evidence and all that thing. But like one of our methodologies is we build technology profiles. So for every technology you have in your organization that falls into the scope of PCI, we have a profile for that particular technology that says, these are the pieces of evidence you need to deliver. Maybe that's 4 things, maybe that's 14 things. Right, that may include screenshots or documents, that sort of stuff, right? And simply add it to a calendar invite. And every year, months before the assessment, you deliver a refresh of your evidence into a SharePoint or OneDrive or whatever, Drop, doesn't matter. But you can really make it easy for everybody to do their parts every year if you can just pull all the convoluted out and say, these are the 3 articles of data evidence I need from you. It's two screenshots and this document.
Right. No, I 100% agree with that. And the problem, too, is the documentation. I can't tell you how many times I've looked at documentation that's 5 years old and hasn't been reviewed and updated, and it's not taken into account, you know, staffing and changes in the environment and that sort of thing. So, yeah, the authorization, I'm giving up on that word. Making it part of your KTLO activities is the best way to ensure compliance. It is the most efficient way of ensuring compliance. And it becomes part of your mission and it becomes part of what you do. And just, you know, document as you go, update diagrams as you go. But, you know, have the quarterly checks, have an internal PCI audit, have PCIPs on staff, invest in your people, get to send them to PCI classes so that they can help ensure that you are compliant before the auditor shows up and everybody goes, oh, crap, we're not compliant. So.
Yeah, and I hate to burst the bubble of all the big GRC guys out there, GRC entities out there, let me say it that way.
Yeah.
But you can do everything that they're claiming their products do with calendar, a spreadsheet, yeah, and a drive location, a share drive. You can do absolutely everything that those technologies claim to be able to do if you're just smart about it and you go forth and lay the pre- configured calendar invites for all the stuff and how to deliver everything. You don't have to babysit yet another technology. You can use what you have.
Yeah, exactly. There's no reason to spend, you know, $100,000 on a GRC deployment.
Because what is it doing? It's got calendar invites and fields to hold data.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, you know, I can think of companies right now that are, you know, the PCI company then also sold them the GRC, you know, the people doing the audit or the QSA. Doing the audit also sold them the GRC tool. So, it just feeds on itself. Now, that being said, I mean, the computer industry is the computer industry, and people are going to buy what they're going to buy. And they still have this misnomer out there, or this misunderstanding out there, that tools are going to save the world. Tools have their validity, and they have their usages, but they are not the savior of the IT industry. The people are. You have to invest in your people. And that's really one of my true, you know, guiding principles. We have to invest in our people because that'll minimize the tools. Unfortunately, for the larger companies, that means you're not buying as many tools.
Yeah. Well, excellent point. I think that's a good note to wrap it up on as well. And just a couple of key takeaways. I mean, for compliance, it's always going to be about building it into your operations and not just waiting until the last minute, as a lot of organizations do. It takes a little bit of upfront planning and support, but again, to the people aspect, I mean, that's going to be critical. You get that good expertise in there to help you build that program out, and your life will be much, much easier, and it'll be a lot more cost effective to align to these compliance requirements. And then another thing, Laura, that you mentioned on getting everybody involved, you know, don't just have one person trying to do the lift, basically involve different people in the organization, make it clear what they're responsible for. Right. And once you have those good systems in place, I think your life will be a lot easier. This won't be such a headache, and it'll be easier to report to the rest of the executive team, the board, that, hey, here's where we are compliance wise, even before the audit, right? You should already have an idea of where the any shortcomings might be. So you can be shoring those up throughout the year, not after they've been pointed out by the auditor. So hope this helps. I know compliance is a thorn in the side for a lot of people. Reach out to us if you have any questions, need any support. And thank you for listening to the Cyber Rants podcast. Please rate us on your favorite podcast platform and let us know other topics you'd like us to talk about. Happy to chat. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
See you next time.
Take care.
Pick up your copy of the Cyber Rants book on Amazon today. And if you're looking to take your cybersecurity program to the next level, visit us online at www.silentsector.com. Join us next time for another edition of the Cyber Rants podcast.